a little intimidating. Yeah.
Yeah.
Got the countdown. It is. Hello, Mark, and hello, listener.
Hi. Good to see you both on a screen.
Welcome, Margaret, to the podcast.
Thank you.
Welcome, first especially time. To episode 100 of the podcast.
Oh, yes. That's right.
Happy 100.
Can you believe you've listened to
100 episodes of us talking?
Actually, I can't. It seems like maybe 50. Maybe okay. 60.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of hours, you're probably getting up to it's about probably, 100 hours.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Why is it so long, mm-hmm. Brendan?
So this is your first ever podcast.
It is. And I just realized I'm going to have to really try hard not to talk while other people are talking. I forgot about that.
No, actually, I mean, what my advice was going to be, just don't think that you're just listening to the podcast you always listen to and like absorb right. an hour conversation. Absolutely jump in and talk
I'll
over
try. Okay. Yeah.
Do you know what? What's interesting is I don't know. I was thinking about this on Saturday. So on Saturday, I had a rather stressful day, but it ended very well.
Great.
Because we successfully pulled off C90 Community Chorus's first ever end of year show.
Yay!
Amazing. I want to hear all about it.
We had a lovely attendance and we got more people on the door. We raised some money for charity. Some Love people it. Came in who just wanted to, because it was in a little sort of micro brewery, and they've got a tap room with a bar there, and they've got an outside area, and we'd sort of commandeered the tap room, but people were coming in from the outside area who just wanted a drink. And what that then meant is that people would come in and they would listen to us, and then some people would pay to buy a ticket or make a donation. We ended up raising significantly more than we did on tickets, which is lovely.
Awesome.
And more to the importantly, the 11 singers had a pretty great time.
Awesome.
And many Good. Of them got to do something that they don't normally get to do.
Sing in front of people.
Yeah.
What was the set list?
Some of these will not make sense to you, because of the ocean that lies between us. But we sang a song called "Stay Another Day," which is a big sort of Christmas, popular Christmas song here. Even though it wasn't a Christmas song, but it ended up being a Christmas song, theme song to Friends. A song called Friday, I'm in Love by The Cure, Killing Me Softly, the Fugees version, Torn by Natalie Imbruglia, Basket Case by The Green Day, and then All I Want for Christmas Is You. That was part one.
Nice.
A song called That's Love Me for a Reason, which was covered by, it's actually a Donny Osmond's or an Osmond's song, but it was covered by Boyzone in the 90s. A Baby One More Time, I Want It That Way, a song called She's a Star by a lovely band here called James, Linger by The Cranberries, What's Up by Four Non Blondes, and then Wilson Phillips's Hold On.
Wow.
And then nice. I strategically planned us an encore because I knew that that's how it would work.
People want it. Yeah.
And they made a lovely ruckus when we left the stage.
Wow.
It was not stage, but we left the bit that we were performing in and went out of the room. And then, like, they were banging on tables.
Wow.
And, Yeah. It was fun. It was quite cute, actually, because a couple of them were like, come on, we've got to go back in. Like, no, you've got to wait. You've got to build up the
Give them a little bit of, yeah, make them
Delayed
be impatient.
Yeah.
And
then we
make
came
them
on,
earn it.
And we did a song from the 70s, a Christmas song from the 70s that was covered by Oasis called Merry Christmas, Everybody. We had lyric sheets for a couple of the Christmas songs so that everybody else could join in.
Wow.
Nice.
That's
you pass
awesome.
Them around to the people watching.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
They killed my printer. I printed them off on Saturday, and I wanted to print about 45 of them, and I think I managed about 20, and then my printer started just, like, if you imagine, I don't know, like a small dog with really big teeth, just like, ang, just like chomping on paper.
Sure.
The paper would go in straight, pretty straight, and it would just come out, and it would just be eaten up. That's the end of that laser printer. Behind me is a new laser printer, which I will install. So, because I do a lot of bloody printing now as part of my job running a community singing group.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense.
It's a lot of
and people want
music.
Their paper.
People want their paper. And so, and then at the end, I was presented with gifts.
Aww.
Which, when I say was not unexpected, I don't mean that to mean that I expected to be given, like, you know, like I thought I should be given gifts.
Correct,
I just
yeah.
knew it was coming because they didn't do a great job of hiding it. They tried, but it wasn't a successful hiding job.
Sure.
And so sort of very, like, from day one, I was like, that's nice, there's something. But I didn't know what, but I knew there was something. And I gathered there was like a card. And so they got me this card, and then inside the card are lots of messages, full on like sheets of paper, card sized paper, double sided, with handwritten messages.
Wow.
From members of the group.
How sweet.
Yeah, saying what it means. And I got lots of that face to face as well. And, you know, people saying that it's, well, basically what I've realized, and I knew this. So we were out Friday night and we did a rehearsal and then we went for a drink, and if it hadn't been clear to me then, it is clear to me now. I'm not allowed to stop.
Yeah.
I'm not allowed to stop doing it.
Not without mass protests, apparently.
Not without, like,
really disappointing people.
Denigration in people's quality of life, by the sounds
of it. Oh, no.
Yeah, because...
Well, this is good, because even if you wanted to, you can't now. And that's, like, it's kind of nice to have something like that.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. It's
at least
really
for the
nice
time being.
To do something. And I knew this only a few weeks going in, I got this sense, but like knowing that you are genuinely doing something that honestly would be missed if it went away, and not in the way that like people say.
Yeah.
You know, like in a way that really would, it would kind of leave a hole. That is, that feels gratifying. So you asked me how I am, and this is the weird thing. It's like, I sort of don't. No, I don't know if I haven't processed everything or anything. Intellectually, I think I'm aware of all of the things. But yeah, I don't know how I feel other than like, I don't know, I'm pretty even keeled about it. It's weird. And on Saturday, I made this really interesting distinction between, intellectually, I was pretty certain, pretty confident, which I rarely am about things, that it was going to be a good night. Like it didn't feel like I wasn't worried about the night, but my nervous system didn't know that.
Sure.
And it was really nice actually to for a moment to just go, ah, right, so this is just like, yeah, because I feel like it's going to be okay. I genuinely do. And so I don't need people to tell me it's going to be okay. I just have to talk to myself kindly, because my nervous system is in, you know, fight flight thing, and it just needs to be soothed. But, you know, I know it's going to be fine. And it went, you know, it's like, I think someone asked me, like, did it go as well as you hoped, better than I hoped? It was like, sort of, in many ways, exactly as I thought it was going to go.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much.
Yeah. Which is
and
great.
So, yeah, exactly.
And so is this internal fight or flight system trying to soothing? Is that the part you were talking about that was the more difficult part? Because you described the event and it seems like it went off without a hitch. But
it did.
You mentioned beforehand that there was something that was a little bit difficult. Is it just?
I think you just said emotional.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there was some difficulty getting there, and there was a whole thing, but that's water under the bridge. But no, I think more just getting to your question is like, I sort of don't know how I feel other than fine. Like, I feel like I should feel more than that. And again, like reading through the messages, it's like, I don't know what I'm accessing, but it's like it means a lot. And I sort of I don't know. It's odd. I mean, that's problems, fair. But it's like.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm supposed to feel something different.
Yeah. Maybe it'll take time. And also, maybe it's just the adrenaline rush of having pulled off that performance and coming down from that. It's going to make you feel fine because it's like a big high and a big low, maybe. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
No,
and also
absolutely.
The aspect of like the feeling like you should feel a certain way. The should is going to lead to problems, you know, because you feel how you feel, and things will come in waves, and you know you did a great job, and like, you're gonna be just feeling it how it comes. Also, you're on new drugs now, so that's going to change things.
Oh, that will make you feel more even keeled. I have experienced the same thing.
Yeah, definitely. And it was, I'm glad, because I think Tuesday, I had quite an anxious day. I just woke up sort of anxious and not feeling great. Had a spiky and awkward and not very great session with my guy, which we'll talk about when I go back to see him, I think, to say, like, I don't know what you... It felt like you were... Like, you wanted something from this, and, like, I don't know what it was, because it's certainly not what I wanted from this.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Can you share any more detail about that?
Part of it was, like, because I was... There was sharing some less than great experiences about running the thing, and the fears that people were having about the gig, and ways that I'd sort of worked to try and help mollify those feelings or whatever. And we got into this thing about, like, why I'm running C90, like, interrogating it. And I'm like, I think in my head, I'm like, yeah, but this is a good thing. I don't need this one to be taken down and examined. Like, let's look at the damaging behavior and those things, and we can look at those and go, like, why is that, and we can treat it with whatever. But, like, no, this is really good, and I don't know why you're trying to poke it.
Sure. Yeah, I get that.
Yeah.
I'll say, from a nine perspective, like, I just had this with Margaret. I get carried away with doing, even if it's a good thing to do or the right thing to do or whatever, I still kind of do too much. And even if it's the right thing, it still kind of has a negative impact in the end. Not to say that C90 does, but it is something that you're doing, and you're doing a lot for it. And there could be a time where you need to do less. And I don't know what that looks like for them, but
yeah, no. For him, it was less about the doing and more about who I'm doing it for.
Okay.
And because, you know, sometimes a therapist will, like, pick up on a particular, and we, a couple of us were talking about this actually on Friday night, just how, you know, sometimes you could just use a particular word and then that becomes the topic of the day. And it's like, no, I, like, there were three adjectives I could have chosen. I just happened to have picked that one. Like, it's,
sure,
you know,
yeah,
it's, it, you know, I just, I went through door B. Like, it's not that, this one's not that deep. But it ended up being, like, a discussion about, like, because I was talking about, like, it means a lot to me that it means a lot to other people. And, like, and I get that, I don't know, man, like, I get that, yeah, you know, we none of us want to seek validation from the approval of others and all that kind of stuff, and that's absolutely fine. But we also don't need to pick something apart when it's seems to be doing everybody. I mean, maybe he just saw me, you know, maybe he just saw me anxious, and maybe he just thought that there was a way to, like, you know, the root of the anxiety was this particular thing. And it's like, no, really, it really wasn't.
But the anxiety's been there since way before C90.
Yeah. Well, this, yeah. And this one, I think, was just a result of, because I'm now on twice the dosage, and that can have an effect.
Yeah.
The medication that helps to deal with your anxiety can give you anxiety, which is great.
And also depression.
Yeah.
Antidepressants can give you suicidal ideation as a side effect at first, which is like, okay. But that's a rare side effect, tell you.
Yeah.
It's a wonderful system.
It's a wonderful system. I mean, they're doing the best they can. This is pharmacology at its best right now. Yeah. But yeah.
So yeah, I had that session with my guy, and then I came home briefly, and then went out again to review my medication with the doctor, who was just like, yep, nope, this is all fine. Yep, good. This is why we've got them. Yep, fine, cool. Yep. Zip, zap, zop. And that was it. So, yeah. So that's me.
Wow, that's a lot.
Yeah.
You're changing lives.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, Margaret, one of the family members of one of the singers said it's changed his life.
Wow.
Wow. So, as a family member.
Yeah.
Oh, not even a participant?
Not
even a participant in the singing.
A family member of one of the participants said it has changed the participant's life.
Oh, okay.
Oh, wonderful.
Wow.
Yeah.
So it's being observed. Your impact is being observed by the third circle. Like you're the first circle. They're the second circle. It's being
indeed.
That's amazing.
The ripples.
That's really cool.
Love it,
so,
mate.
So yeah, it's a good day.
Hey, Mark. What does a Scottish billionaire celebrate this time of year?
Hog money.
Yeah.
Yep. Damn it. I wrote down the wrong.
Ooh, that one got an applause. Oh.
It's only because they're not labeled. I always forget which one's which. Fucking hell. Okay. Yeah, good. No.
Hey, Margaret, how are you doing? I don't have another joke.
Oh, okay.
I was really teeing up there. Okay.
I was really prepared to. Well, no, we just found out what hog money is because we went to something called the Portland Revels. That's like this annual kind of solstice celebration with choral music and theater, and they have children and adults, and they do a different theme every year, and this year was the Scottish Highlands. So they decided to take that on. And they talked about the history of, in the 1600s, Christmas was outlawed in Scotland, and effectively, like, celebrating
probably
it.
The Calvinists.
It was the Protestant Reformation, yes. So yes, probably the Calvinists. And they just decided to start celebrating New Year's a few days early. And apparently the church is fine with that, because they don't have nuance. They're just like, okay, as long as it's not about Christ, you're good. Celebrate all you want.
Go hog wild.
It's also,
go hog wild, like, on Hogmanay.
I don't get why the church was trying to stop people from celebrating Christ. I don't.
Well, no, it's like they thought it was Catholic excess. They thought it was like a symbol of the Catholic Church's frivolity. And like the Protestant Reformation was kind of all about how Catholics were corrupt because they were they were hogging all the wealth. They were hogging the money. So I think they just saw like all the singing and dancing like as a somehow a symbol of that. And I don't agree. I'm just saying that's what they thought. It was like not austere enough, not respectful enough, not like somber enough, because that was their deal.
Yeah.
It is what in England would have been called Elizabethan, but obviously with being Scottish, it wouldn't have been, you know. But
right.
You know, in sort of Elizabethan time. Oh, sorry. Well, yeah,
well,
Elizabethan
like
times.
1600s, so a little after.
Yeah, but
but kind
of. In terms of it's the same sort of in mourning for Prince Albert, you know, everything was had to be for a very, very, very long time, just austere.
Oh, yeah, Victorian.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
But then Victorian Christmases then became something very different. And you know, we borrowed a shitload of stuff from Germany in our traditions.
Oh, right.
And now we have
Prince Albert was German.
Yeah.
Cool.
Now we have a grand old time.
Yeah. No, I know you do. We should go to England for Christmas someday. But my friend Maya is doing, like, her family is doing, she's like, we don't do enough on Christmas. We should do a theme this year. Maya's, I don't know, I guess an Anglophile is what you would call it. An American who thinks they know things about England and loves them. So she's like, let's do British Christmas. So they're going to make like, oh God, it's like Disneyland version, but they're going to make different just desserts. They're like, her mom's making sticky toffee pudding or something. And Maya's making this chocolate orange pudding in a ramekin. And I don't know where they're getting. Probably
but
online.
To make it truly American, you have to serve that with the turkey and gravy, because you'll do some fucked up stuff with your roast, like, dinners, with your, like, marshmallow pudding or whatever the hell it is, marshmallow casserole next
That's
to
like
the fucking turkey covered in gravy.
I know. Oh, it's like a Midwestern thing. That's
sweet
like a
savory.
Minnesotan.
Yeah, yeah, it's like sweet and savory is a thing, but that's a dessert on your plate covered in gravy with the turkey.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. We did that on Thanksgiving.
Yep.
My dad doesn't do the marshmallows, but he does sweet potato casserole, which, yes, is like sweet potato
sugar.
And pecans. It's right there on the plate with the turkey and the
cranberry. Well, I don't think it was Montessori, but it was, what was the teaching where you should have the dessert on the plate for the child? So that everything's equal.
It's not really a teaching, but yeah, it's like trying to not inculcate the idea that dessert is bad or it that should be a bribe or a later treat, for like good behavior or a treat.
It's like equal.
And yeah, I was definitely bribed with treats.
Segmented plates. I like that at school. It's, you know, especially because there are some people in the, one might say, autistic community who do not like the idea of they want everything to be dry.
Yeah.
And the idea of some foods touching other foods is an anathema.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I think we should bring back segmented plates.
Yeah.
It all gets combined in the stomach. It all gets mixed.
That's out of an autistic person's control.
I know.
But it's like, as far as experiencing the textures, you can control that.
Yeah.
I have a friend who, like, is autistic and just alerted me to the very, like, obvious fact that cheese is really disgusting. It's like a stinky milk loaf, in their words. And I was like, it actually is. Like, that is really true. And we've just all decided it's fine. But
that is how I feel about eggs. Like, I'll eat eggs. I will eat eggs in lots of different things. But if I think about eggs too much,
I feel
sick because they're disgusting. Eggs are
disgusting. They actually are gross. Like,
yes,
having
so
a hard shell. I know. Like, it's just weird that that came out of an animal with that hard shell on. That kind of squeezed me out. And then, like, there's the liquid inside. It's, like, the different textures, and it's, like...
just a goo. Yeah,
how is that part of a body?
It's just a bird's menstrual cycle. Like, come on, what's...
yeah, what's the problem with that?
What's the problem with that?
It's an unfertilized egg that... we were just talking about, like... how menstrual cycles have been misunderstood. And I feel like that's why, because the chicken releases the unfertilized egg out of their bodies. And I just had a friend who got their fallopian tubes removed, and she was expecting that her period would stop, because in sex education in America, or at least like rumors that you hear or like something, a lot of women grew up thinking that your period is the unfertilized egg, like, releasing from your body. Just like, I guess, a chicken's egg. But actually, it's the uterine lining shedding when there's no egg to implant onto it. So it's part of your uterus that grows every month and then sheds every month when there's nothing to implant. But but she thought, oh, I'm getting my fallopian tubes removed. I won't have a period anymore because the egg has nowhere to go. But womp, 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 that's not true. You will still.
Yeah. You gotta actually shed
the
uterine.
You have to remove your uterus to not have a period anymore. Or age. So. Or just wait. It'll happen.
Oh,
anyway,
for the best of us.
The chicken egg is misleading for human anatomy because.
Yeah. And a chicken egg is daily. They have a
is it? Oh, yeah. It makes no sense.
It makes no sense. That's so much. Like, I don't understand how they can eat enough for that to happen.
And is it seasonally or is it every day of
the
year?
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I thought I was pretty sure it was every day.
I think it might be every day.
Yeah.
That's a lot of eggs if you own chickens.
It is.
I see now why we get our eggs from someone who does own chickens. And now I see why they have, like, they have so many to spare.
Yeah.
Everyone who owns chickens does, because every day, multiple hens.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, I don't know why I like this fact, but I just, you know, because I feel like, I don't know, like, whenever I saw eggs in America or saw, like, eggs depicted in America, they were always white. And most of the eggs that you get, that I've encountered in the UK, are brown. And then every now and again, you get white eggs. And I was curious as to why, and it's just... whether the hen's white or brown.
Oh, that's funny. We just have more of the white and you have more of the brown, I guess.
Well, then what color are the chickens that lay the blue eggs I keep getting?
Oh, no.
That is a thing. Well, I don't know.
I don't know.
Oh, no.
Maybe there's a blue hen.
God. How are you getting blue eggs?
Maybe it's a blue heron and I didn't even know.
Well, also, you guys don't do things to your eggs that we do, I believe, which means you may have encountered unrefrigerated eggs in supermarkets, certainly in the UK, because we put a thing on the eggs, like a waxy thing, that means that they can last longer unrefrigerated.
Okay.
Interesting.
And you all don't.
Like a preservative seal. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that seems fine, considering that the shell goes away. So you're not going to eat that wax.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fascinating. We also, like, I'm aware that eggs can be unrefrigerated. I'm not really sure how long.
Yeah.
Right.
But I think, like, it just might
for
be
for a day or so,
longer.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, it's like when a recipe calls for... Well, I was just thinking about when a recipe calls for eggs at room temperature, and you're like, crap, I didn't take out the eggs the night before. It's like the thing that throws a hurdle into baking the most, or you butter.
I would have hoped that it wouldn't take a whole night, though, to bring eggs up to room temperature.
Probably not. Probably like a couple
minutes,
hours.
I would have thought. Yeah.
I don't know.
I would have thought, because they're only small. Like, because you do that with meat, and I think, like, if you're going to do, like, a steak, I think a steak might take an hour. I don't think it takes that long to bring up to room temperature, but, like, an egg, I don't think so much. But then, you know,
right.
I am defrosting a metric butt ton of chicken at the moment.
Oh, what for? For yourself?
The metric system is so weird.
It giggles. Oh. I buy, so there is a, you can buy big old bulk bags of chicken bits, thighs and legs, and wings, and they come frozen, and it means you can buy loads in bulk. And then what I'm going to do is probably cover them all in buffalo sauce.
Mm.
Yes.
Maybe I might mix buffalo sauce and... I thought I had yogurt, but I don't, because that's a good tenderizer, and that would tenderize the meat. But I might just slather it all in buffalo sauce, and then I'll cook them in batches, and then I've just got loads of delicious chicken.
Delicious.
For when I need chicken.
Yeah,
the period.
Mm.
That's good. That's good. We did chicken wings last night in the air fryer.
Oh, yes.
Lemon herb.
Yes. See, I was thinking this morning, so I was listening to a food podcast, and I was thinking about, like, because what they tend to do is talk about people's dream meals, and often the things, like the courses that they'll talk about will be linked to a memory. And I was thinking about, like, I only got as far as my starter, and I was thinking... I probably want the chicken wings with the buffalo sauce from Fire on the Mountain.
Yeah.
I think that would be my starter.
Yay. That's so good to hear.
That was a good memory.
One of our foods made a good impression on you.
Oh, yeah. And possibly the dill potatoes for a side in my main.
Those
potatoes were insane.
Was that?
Fryer
that
Tuck.
Was from Fryer Tuck's, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Delicious.
That was insane.
That was a good day.
It was a good day. It was a good day. Yep.
Oh my god.
A whole year ago.
I know.
But it's been quite a year.
Yeah.
Yeah, how was your 2025, y'all? Like, it's been a year.
I think Margaret should go.
Well, half of my year has been in Montessori training, so in grad school, basically, and working. So it's been a lot of work and a blur again. So I feel like the year is pretty dominated by that. This is funny because it's like, what can you talk about on a podcast? Brendan was talking about this, how you're like, I don't know what I should say because this is theoretically for public consumption. And it's been admissible into a court of law before.
Potentially infinite listeners.
I'm already like, I shouldn't have said a name of someone, but that's what editing is for.
Yeah, I can take it.
Yeah. But yeah, this year has been full of...
learning lessons.
Reality checks. Reality checks. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I will say, I don't know if you've heard the episode yet, but your husband did like... Just
I did hear
talk
that.
Shit
yeah.
about a guy for like an hour and a half last week. Yeah. Last episode.
Yeah.
So. Totally anonymously. Yeah. Nobody could ever figure out.
Totally anonymously. Yeah. Well,
I didn't go to a rage room with that guy. I didn't play.
We don't know him. We don't know him.
Yeah.
He goes to a different
school. Well, yeah. Brendan's anger is pretty fascinating because, well, as he likes to talk about, as an Enneagram 9, he hides it most of the time, or like it's there, but it's you really can't see
it
ever.
Push it down.
Yeah. I think unconsciously, completely, he always has it, but it's not activated. And then sometimes it does get activated, and it's startling to everybody, but it's good. It's good that it comes out. Like, it's actually like, okay, good. I'm glad you're expressing it and not in a violent, well, I don't think you would, but like, in a safe way. You're just able to yell a bit on a podcast. That's great.
Yeah.
It's good.
I was going to pretend that I just like walked back into the room and it's like, hey, what y'all is talking about? Yeah. It's purely like not even subconscious. I'm kind of conscious of it, but I'm not pushing it down. It's just like, that's not important. It's, it feels irrelevant that I'm, that it makes me angry. And
I don't know that one.
Yeah. And then it gets to a certain point where it's like, okay, no, now it is relevant. And I am very angry about this. And not only am I angry about this thing, but it is informed by all these other things. And so I'm just going to air it all right now so that I can vent it all out and reset and be okay again. It's like a volcano.
I experienced anger on Saturday when, with 3 minutes before I was supposed to be picked up, the person picking me up told me that they were going to be half an hour late.
Whoa.
Oh, wow.
And the time that they were going to pick me up was the time that we were supposed to be there.
Dang.
Oh.
And I was pretty sure, like, I should probably be the first person to be there. And so I was angry.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you know, went straight into what do I do mode, you know.
Sure.
And managed to find someone who absolutely saved the day. And I was speaking to someone later and they were like, well, you know, it's only half an hour. I was like, okay, it's more the reason they gave was just so, like, blasé.
It's
like, you know, we've been really planning this for six months. We've been planning this for 3 months. You had one job.
Yeah. All you, like, had to do was get up on time and get ready on time.
Yeah.
And schedule your day a little bit different, maybe.
Or specific, yeah.
Yeah, and it's like, I'm sat here, and like, anyway, so yeah, I tapped into my anger, but...
And what did you do about it? Were you just feeling it, or did you let it out somehow? Did you yell at them?
No. Because again, like you say, it's like, well, what's the point?
Yeah.
Because it's not going to achieve anything. Right now, I need to get a lift.
Right.
So I basically said, don't worry about it. I'll find another lift. And they were like, well, I can get here. It's like, no, it's fine. Like, I will find another lift. And I think I'd said, like, I asked you to be here knowing you'd be late and you were still late. Mm. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I gave them 15, 20 minutes grace, knowing that, you know, that'll probably be fine. But yeah, like, again, I gave them too little grace, or too much grace, rather. And so, yeah, like I said, you know, I'd already accounted for the fact that you were probably going to be late, and then this was more late. So, yeah.
That's disappointing.
So it wasn't, you know, like, wah! Because again, like, what would be the point? They, you know, they turned up and they helped very much in other ways. And so it's like, you know, that one thing I'm angry about, but you know, it's what does it achieve, especially if we can find ways to vent in other ways. It's fine, you know. And yeah, like I was just sort of thinking there about the fact that, like, I'm not the sort of person who's then going to, like, I didn't need to spread those bad vibes to anyone else, you know. It's just like, that's
gotta keep the peace.
Do you guys find that when you're angry that you, after you experience the anger, it's gone? Or do you hold on to anger in, like, resentment? Or does it, like, once you're angry at a person and then the situation's done, are you good with that person? I guess the answer is probably no, but...
No, that's a really good question. I think there is being good with the person, and then I can still access the anger at the behavior.
Yeah. For sure.
And I can still say that that made me angry, but it would take a bit more, like, it changes the dynamic of the relationship, because for something like that, if it's about relying on someone, it's like, okay, like, now I've learned I don't rely on this person for this thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm never going to ask you, I'm never going to put either of us in that position again.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But otherwise, we're fine. Yeah. But, you know, if you come to me and you say, I'd love to, you know, a chance to do this again, I'm going to say, like, forgiveness is fine. Like, forgive you. But, like, I'm not going to rely on you again, because you know, that's a trust or whatever that you've broken.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, we're good in other ways. So I think that's the way, because especially when you've got any kind of, and I'm not equating this, but, like, you know, any kind of trauma, any kind of complex stuff, especially with people that you've known for a very long time, they will have done things in your life that have hurt you and made you angry and like,
oh, yeah,
you know, and that kind of stuff. And you can't cut them off.
Yeah.
And so I think we have to learn to put that in a box. But I think the important thing is that we don't bury that box in soft peat for 3 years and never dig it up again.
Mm.
We need to sort of just, yeah, it needs to be there. But then, you know, then there's the whole thing about like forgiveness being something you do for yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So that it's you like can releasing release yourself. Yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. What about you, Brendan?
Yeah. I'm definitely thinking about this in the context of my recent anger on the note previous episode.
Sure.
And
that was kind of an extreme situation.
Yeah. And so
not to discount it, but.
Well, yeah. But to analyze it and learn lessons from it, like, because when it's not extreme, it's so easy to just have no repercussions from that at all. I don't treat the mm-hmm. other person any differently. I don't really harbor any ill will. I definitely don't harbor any ill will for them. I want the best for them, but also like, yeah, like Mark said, I will ask less from them or ask nothing from mm-hmm. them.
Expect less. Yeah.
Yeah, I definitely expect less.
Yeah.
But like, you know, this person moved away and then they had mail still come here, and my anger was like, and this was a piece of mail that I knew that they really wanted to have because they had talked about it, and the anger in me was like, well, maybe I just accidentally slipped it into the recycling, or maybe I burn it, or maybe I shred it and then send it to him. You know,
smear it up your butt and then send it to him.
Yeah. Yeah, but in the end, I just popped it in another envelope and sent it off to him. And yeah, it's like, I'm not actually going to let, because I am still angry. Mostly I'm still angry because I feel like I'm still dealing with the aftermath once the aftermath has kind of actually left my life and I'm not dealing with it on a daily basis, then the anger will very likely subside, and I'll just, that person will just be neutral to me. But regardless, I'm not going to let that anger dictate how I treat the person.
Yeah, you've talked about that a lot.
Yeah.
Which is admirable. But I wonder if that's like part of what got you not into this mess, but like you treated him really well, even yeah. though he was not doing the same, or he was on the surface, but like there were things he was doing that really affected our lives and
yeah.
well-being and,
yeah.
but you still kept treating him really well, but yeah. also like, but I don't also, know, I wonder where the line is between
sure.
for myself too of like, but I don't usually have that same problem. I was just, anyway, I think I was in denial about, because you weren't showing the anger, I was like, everything's fine.
Well, that's really interesting. Yeah.
I think.
For sure,
it wasn't,
I get that.
I wasn't dealing with the bad effects of that person's behavior.
Yeah, I was kind of hiding it from you a bit. Partially, I didn't want to, like, affect other people's relationships with him. Like, yeah, he made me angry because of this thing that he did or that thing. I'm not trying to destroy his life by telling other people what he's done.
Yeah.
But also, you know, yeah, it did affect you, and I could have been more clear about that.
And I could have been more like, this is really bad. And
yeah.
any relationship I have with this person is not enough to justify this. Like, anyway, this is like a therapy session between just
I was going to make the joke of, and that's our time, guys.
And that's our time. I'm sorry, we got to go.
Same time next week.
Yep.
Mark's like, this is the easiest therapist gig I've ever had. Like, I make the big bucks just letting them talk it out.
Yeah.
It's great.
The money's in couples therapy, definitely. Just set them off. Find them up and
set them off and just be there. Take some notes.
So, Margaret, how do
Brendan, notes on 2025. Sorry, go on.
Yeah.
Go on. Logjam.
Since we were talking about how we deal with anger, I was wondering what your reaction to your own question was.
Oh, So I'm an Enneagram 4, and I feel like maybe in the context of the Enneagram, it's helpful because if we're just talking individually, it's kind of like, oh God, this says too much about me as a person, maybe. But I think that I have a really hard time letting go of anger sometimes. Like if I feel, I sort of push it down because I want to be liked and I want everything to be good. And I think I have a really hard time with letting other people down myself. So when someone lets me down, like disappoints me, I have a history of just pretending to myself and to them, everything's fine. It must be a problem with me if I'm feeling so bad. It's like, I probably just had unrealistic expectations, or I sort of get down on myself about it. And then I think because I don't deal with it there and then, and I don't address it, it can sometimes wrinkle into this like low-grade resentment that stays, and I don't really feel it or realize it until later. And it's kind of like with you, Brendan, where it's like one thing breaks the dam and then I'm like, and also I feel badly about you because of this, 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 this. And so I think I'm getting better at that and like addressing behavior as opposed to people, and also handling it in the moment and being like, oh, that really sucked. And then getting over it and being able to move past it, because it's a terrible feeling to hold on to anger.
Yeah.
I definitely, and I don't know if I do it as much now, but I definitely, and this is part of, you know, come up in therapy, like for many years, just had that resentment because there is sometimes a question of whether you are entitled to your anger.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly for me anyway. And so there's a lot of second guessing, a little bit like you said, actually, Margaret, about, you know, is it just me? Have I got unrealistic expectations, or have I misunderstood? All that kind of stuff. And I think, you know, that's one of the things that I think that was coming up on Tuesday with my guy, was like he was trying to get me to be angry. Not that situation, but like with certain things, I think that was, he was trying to in some ways get me to sort of tap into that. And yeah, it's something that I don't have a lovely handle on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's hard.
Yeah, it is.
It's hard to, in the moment, be like, you are disappointing me right now. Or, like, saying something, like, to that effect. Like, this is not, I don't feel good about this. And then, I don't know, I was in a situation with a friend kind of recently that still bugs me because we never really resolved it. And it was like, she was angry at things that had happened in the past. And that made me just go into, like, fight or flight, like so scared of her anger because I felt like she hadn't told me at the time. So it was like a mirror back to me of what I do. And then I was angry about how she handled it. But then you get into the nitty gritty of like, well, yeah, am I entitled to this anger? Is she, and then I would get stuck in like, is she right and I'm wrong, or am I right and she's wrong? And I couldn't really see how both could be true. So it's whatever, but it's just like, that is so hard, especially if you're like in this black and white thinking. And now I think I've come to a place where I'm like, okay, I really did fuck up in this friendship, but also it wasn't a very safe relationship for me emotionally. Like, it didn't feel good. And so both things can be true. And
yes,
I just have to sit with that and it's okay.
Yeah.
Or it's like, it is what it is. But yeah, holding on to anger is, like being on the receiving end of that held on to anger is so tough. And then also holding on to it is tough too.
You had quite a reaction, Mark. Is that?
Have you experienced that where someone's like, here's everything I'm angry about?
Not in it, holding on to it in a different way. There is a member of my family who has...
I wonder who could be.
Who has a propensity to, in the moment, keep pushing on a particular thing. Like, there'll be one thing that they're upset about or annoyed about that they want to, you know. Usually, it always comes in the shape of it's some, you know, behavior that they want to correct. And they can't just say the thing and let it go. It comes in these, like, acid spits and it goes on for, like, it's always and another thing.
Oh, no.
And it's just like you're never quite able to get back up again before you get another punch. It's like, you know, and at some point you just stood there going, it'll end at some point. They'll stop at some point.
You just play dead, basically. Like, you just lie down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oof.
Because what else can you do?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Tell them to stop. Speak.
That's harder than...
Speak up for yourself.
That's hard. That's really hard in a family relationship because there's been so much practice at the dynamic. Like, the dynamic is like, it has a life of its own. And if you try to stop it, it's like a big deal because you've never done that before.
Yep. And I'm still stuck in I don't want to get in trouble mode.
Yeah, because
I still think as a man of 42, I can get in trouble.
Sure.
I know. Yeah.
I get it.
I do too.
And I'm curious, like, and it's something that I've come into and looked into here and again is, like, I don't know how much of that is to do with feeling more as a person with additional needs, feeling like getting in trouble means those additional needs will not be taken care of, cared for.
Right.
That's really life-threatening.
Yeah. It's a scary thought that, like, if I get in trouble, then it will be much harder for me to ask for support when I need it.
Right. And exile from a family takes on a different tone then, because it's not just emotional loneliness, which is also a killer, but it's like
physical needs.
Basic survival.
It takes you, it basically takes you, and I've never thought about it before, but it essentially takes you down a row in Maslow's hierarchy of needs.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because you can't fulfill the basic, so you can't reach the self-actualization.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's heavy. So that's a fun one. But what I will say is, and what is wonderful about having a I described it as a found family in C90 is I really feel now, I mean, as I did on Saturday, you know, I asked someone who'd offered help before to say, actually, can you help? And to know actually that if I did need help with something, that there would be people around who would be willing to help.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And that's huge. Pretty cool.
Super cool.
Yeah.
Super, super cool. Yeah. I just experienced that recently with, like, I think I used to, like, sometimes reach out compulsively for help emotionally and, like, it was not helpful. But now I can, like, self-soothe more. But I also, just knowing that there are people in my life, especially now, like people who are trustworthy that I could call anytime, and if they were available, they would listen and support. It's like, that's just knowing that is enough, like most of the time. And I know it's different for like getting lifts and like basic needs, but it's like, but it sometimes just knowing, yeah, it all counts, that the knowledge of support is like, that's half of it.
Yeah.
At least.
I'm growing that community of people that I feel like I can reach out to, but I've definitely, like, the my whole pattern with the person that's now left, like, was reaching out to this person who I knew I couldn't trust for a bunch of different support and being consistently disappointed. And then keep going back to him, like a very unhealthy relationship.
Yeah.
Because they were there and they were convenient.
Yeah. Well, yeah. It was like, I know I can't trust you, but I can trust you to be exactly who the disappointment that you are. And
so consistent.
So consistently a disappointment. And so I knew what I was getting.
I mean, there was, I want to say, like, this person had, well, I don't, like, good qualities in the sense that, like, available, consistent, try, like, in their way, trying to be there. Yeah. But, yeah, I don't want to discount, like, such, so disappointing, but also very reliable in certain ways.
Exactly.
So I can understand why you would go back
to and that. It was easy. Like, it was just...
Right.
It, like, bringing on somebody, like, and I did, I reached out to other people and brought them on and tried asking for their help. And there was like just different challenges. They were, you know, better or worse or whatever. They were just different. It's like, okay, now I have to adjust to this. I have to adjust my expectations and everything. and it was fine, but it's like, okay, well, I can also just go back to this guy who I know is going to disappoint me in this way, so I will make adjustments for that and live around that. But now, like, you know, wonderfully, that's out of the picture, and I have, you know, I'm trying to build up the new community around myself of people that I can rely on both physically and emotionally. And yeah, it's really hard for me to reach out and ask for people for help for anything. And I even get, like, I have a couple friends that are like, just, you know, yeah, call me when you need anything. And I'm like, that's amazing. Thank you. I'm really glad you said that.
Thank you for saying that, but I'm never going to.
I don't. Yeah. I've even thought about it, like, on my own. I'd just be like, okay, they told me to reach out. I should reach out because I am going through stuff and I probably do need help. But, like, what do I say? What do I need help with? That part, I struggle, like, even when I'm consciously trying to think about it, I'm like, okay, I'm going to reach out for help. I'm blank. Like, what's the help I need? What do I, I don't know what to ask for. I don't know how to start this conversation.
That's tricky.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wonder if it's, like, a gender thing partly too, because I feel like women are socialized to, like, be there for each other a bit more. So a lot of our friendships are based on listening, and I don't want to generalize, but yeah, like, based on listening, supporting, talking through problems together. So in an emotional support sense, it's kind of like not necessarily expected. It's still hard to reach out, especially with newer friends, but it's like, this is kind of ingrained in the system of what friendship looks like.
Right.
And I wonder if for, like, it's people who identify as men, it's a little bit different.
Definitely.
Because it's more about doing things together, yep, or, like, having fun.
Yep. Yep. Yeah, if I go to one friend, they'll be like, all right, you want to go to the rage room about it? It's like,
oh, God.
That's...
It's like, that's...
It's great.
That's fine sometimes. Yeah. Yeah.
And we need an activity.
We need to do something.
It's not a good activity. Oh my gosh. Yeah. 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 And, you know, it can be helpful and it can be appropriate, but it's also like, it's a bit, but no, I think I need to process this somehow. And, you know, sure, that's a somatic way of processing, but it's also limited, we'll say. Yeah. I think part of my 2026 is going to be trying to get out of my comfort zone and talk to people about my inner world, I guess. I don't know. I've got to figure out what to talk about. Or maybe I just need to reach out and be like, hey, I don't know what to say, but I want to talk.
Yeah, let's, like, go for a walk or something. Yeah. And then maybe it'll come out.
Yeah.
And if it doesn't, at least you are doing something, but it's not, like, it's a great avenue for talking.
Yeah, for sure. That's a great idea.
Going on a walk.
Thank you.
Done. Yeah. Because I was curious about, like, you felt like you needed something, but you didn't know what it was. And I'm a be bold and wonder if you need a friend. Is what you're looking for is just a friend.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because, as you know, much as there were issues with the person who shall not be named, you know, they were a friend. And
yeah.
It's fair enough having slightly functional relationships with other dudes, whether it's part of a men's group or the dodgeball stuff or whatever, where there's like an activity. But it's also good to just have a buddy.
Yep, for sure.
And there doesn't have to be, you know, like, just hanging out, just going for a drink, going for a drive, going for a whatever, and you might just need a new best friend.
Yeah,
someone who, like, you just enjoy their company and they enjoy yours, and it doesn't really matter what you do together.
Yeah.
That's so true.
I think there is kind of
a void, because you had a best friend who that relationship kind of got distant because of stuff.
Distance and
distance, physical distance, but also
our worlds kind of like mine evolved and changed, and his, he liked keeping what he had, and that was great. But on his side of things, he really felt the shift. I wasn't really feeling the shift as much, and I was just like, mm-hmm. yeah, I'm happy to do my new things, and also I'm still happy to hear about your same things. So, like, that's great. Mm-hmm. And he was like, we don't relate anymore. And I'm like, what? Wait, what? And so, yeah. And so that kind of moved on. And then, yeah. And then I tried really hard to make this friendship work, and yeah, kept, yeah.
It would have been really convenient because, you know,
yeah,
he was already my friend.
Right.
Like, you saw him all the time. Right. He worked with you. Like, it would have been ideal.
Yeah. Let's just be best friends. And it was like, I can't emotionally, like, this hurts. This hurts a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. I do.
I think that, I just think that, to be a little woo-woo about it, I think that now that the space has opened up for, with him gone, if you just keep that kind of open, there will be room for something else to come through that is more of what you need and desire. Absolutely. And not try to fill it with something that does not work.
Right. Yeah.
That will be the hard part, I think.
Yeah. No, I completely agree. And yeah.
It's so strange that as a kid, I remember trying to wrap my head around the concept of adult friendships.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
It just felt like, no. You have like brothers and sisters who are my aunts and uncles. Like, they're my aunts and uncles.
Right.
Like,
right.
Less that your brothers, that's weird. No, they're my aunts and uncles.
Uh-huh.
And there are neighbors and there are people that you do your job with.
Sure.
And we might see those people, but friends, no, that's weird. No, that's weird.
Yeah, do your parents have many friends?
My mum more than my dad, they had mutual friends, and one of them, they live in up north, and one of them died a few months back. Mm. And they'd been friends for 20 years.
Mm. Wow.
Yeah, and my mum's got friends from a course she took over 30 years ago, and they've still hung out, like, which is quite incredible. But yeah, my dad less so, and you know, it's something we've talked about before, and I won't, you know, like that stuff. But yeah, I think that notion as a kid of like grown-ups having friends, it's just like, no, that's something kids have. And I think, I'm not saying that we all feel like that way, but like, we don't necessarily think about how much that is valuable because, you know, there's the whole, like, I guess we're expected to be partnered up, which is fair enough. But then there is still a hole, there can still be a hole there for a different kind of relationship.
For sure. Yeah. Yeah. My dad didn't have any friends, and my mom had some, but they were pretty distant and they didn't like get together a lot, or I didn't see adult friendships modeled to observe.
Yeah.
My dad has like a core group of a few friends, but they're all colleagues. Like, they all met. And his job is kind of different because he's in the symphony and a musician. So they all, like, most people stay there for 30 years, you know? So they have a lot of time to get to know each other. But he has like two best friends from that. And then he has like a couple childhood friends that live in different places. But my mom has like, she has coworkers and one childhood friend who lives across the country and maybe neighbors, but like, yeah, it's kind of just like coworkers and neighbors. And then my dad has coworkers and a couple people from the past that they'd rarely see. So yeah, it wasn't modeled to me a whole bunch.
No. And I think
either.
As you get older, there are fewer, it feels like anyway, there are fewer avenues to find completely new friendships.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is one of the reasons, like, the more and more I talk about it, the more I think about it, the more focused I am on my sort of thing with my little company and what I'm doing, the work that I'm doing, and also with C90, is using the internet in as much as it's useful for getting people together.
Yeah.
Or getting people together.
Great. Yeah.
Because, like, I mean, I knew it beforehand, but like this, like, you know, of all of the things that I've tried to do on the internet, and of, you know, many of them have been community based, the fact that this works and works to such a degree and has so much impact can only happen because it happens in person.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, yeah, like it has fostered, it has created, it's birthed new friendships, new relationships, new support networks. It's, you know, the like fabric of our little bit of society, for want of a better word, is stronger because, you know, there's maybe 20 of us who can, like, we're in touch like almost every day.
Yeah,
it's awesome.
I think, you know, that's key.
Yeah,
like a lot of my new friends have come from a group I've told you both about that I joined because I decided not to drink anymore alcohol. And I was like, can I find people who also do this? Because this is kind of like, none of my friends are doing this or whatever. And I'd like to know how people are navigating society and stuff and life without making this choice. And so I found this social group in Portland, and it's since disintegrated, but I met so many people through that. And part of it was like, and it was kind of scary to make new friends because I went through growing up in the same place I live. I just like kept a lot of the same relationships forever, even ones that weren't really serving me anymore. So it was really scary to like put myself out there to make new friends. But I think the leader of the group said something about it takes like this many hours of time together to build a friendship. And you just got to keep, well, the way I thought about it was, it's funny because before we went to church, I kind of was like thinking about this. It's like church where you just show up to things and eventually you're going to make friends, but you can't force a friendship. It's like you just have to keep spending time together and things will happen. And then, yeah, I think going to church literally is like that too, where it's like you see the same people every week, you strike up conversations, you go to this thing, you talk together, and eventually like a fabric of a friendship is formed. And I feel like we don't have as many things in our society these days, in our world, that are like that. And C90 is one of them too, where it's like you just show up, you learn to show up however you are. You learn that you don't have to perform. You learn that you can show up grumpy. You can show up tired. You can show up good. People are still there. They still want to see you. And then friendships are usually slowly formed. Because I think I used to have kind of a fantasy that like, oh, if you meet someone who's supposed to be your good friend, like you'll just instantly click. And that's not usually the way it goes.
Yeah.
Because people just, yeah. I mean, sometimes, but usually often you just keep going.
The people that I've had, I don't know about often, but like I can definitely note there are people in my life that I didn't take to at all to begin with and then became really good friends with.
Mm-mm.
Because, yeah, there's just, you know, meeting one person on one night when they're in a particular space mentally or whatever.
Yeah.
And you're in a particular space as well. You know, two anxieties run together or rub together. You know, like it does take a while. And it's freaky for C90 how quickly those friendships have formed.
Amazing.
And that's not great. Usual.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, I will take some credit, even if I've, you know, like I don't know all of the recipe yet, although I know I've cooked something. I don't know what all the ingredients are yet or in what proportions, but something about the way I make that space happen means that people feel safe and that, you know, new people can come in and pretty quickly, you know, like the ones that don't gel are like we see them like and that's notable. Like we can see the sort of the people who are like don't quite fit in with what we're about.
Yeah.
And it's nothing that needs to be said, but you can just clock and go like, yeah, that's they're not, you know.
And do they self exit?
Yeah, it does seem to be the case.
That's great.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not through, you know, being ostracized. It's just like we're over here, you know, moving at this speed, and they're over there moving at a different speed. And it's like at some point we're going out of sync, and you know we're going to stay here. We meet every week, so
Right.
If we're going out of sync, like, it's up to you to figure out what you want to do, because, you know, we're not moving.
This is us.
And it's great, you know, and because I know it's such a good, and it's great because I know it's such a good group, and I know it's such a supportive group that I can feel confident knowing, like, if this is not your tempo, then, you know, as Ringo would say, peace and love, peace and love. But, you know, there's the door.
Yeah. Yeah, that feels good to be so sure of something like that.
Yeah.
And I think because you guys share, music is such a great, music is such a great bringer together, and especially nostalgia too. And like, that's like just a perfect recipe. And then the safe space that you bring to it, I'm sure it all comes together to make people feel really, really happy to be there and really connected to others that are doing it also.
And then there's, you know, there's the whole sort of thing about how singing together, group singing, raises your endorphins and does all sorts of things. And it is a bonding thing as well, which is probably one of the reasons, it is one of the reasons that the friendships have been accelerated, because you're in a space, you're sharing oxygen and you're singing in unison or in harmony. And, you know, to a degree, you're being vulnerable together as well, because you're letting out your unironic, unprotected, full voice.
Yeah. That's fascinating. Kind of makes me think of church singing and how maybe that was by design to like bring a church together. It's like, we're going to sing because it's that vulnerability and that connective tissue. It's really interesting. So, so fascinating.
Yeah.
How like things have been designed to bring people together or to keep them apart or,
Yeah, I have a, we were talking about the me needing a friend, and now this, that space has opened up, and I immediately started thinking about one person who I would, we're doing really well together. We're both in a men's group together, and we've both expressed interest in wanting to connect more, and it just hasn't naturally happened yet. And I was like, hmm, maybe there's space I can kind of foster that. But then as you've been talking about music, I have another friend from a different men's group that was like, we should do a, like a regular jam session. You should come over and play music together. And I'm like, I love that. There I love that idea. And also like, as you,
I love that.
You know, my insecurities are definitely like, you know, I don't know if I am good enough and to play music well enough and whatever, but I, definitely.
Do you feel like they're a really good musician?
I've never.
Or do you
I don't know that I've ever heard them play anything. I don't even actually know what instrument they play. No, they play keyboard.
That'll be fun.
Yeah.
You could try once, and if it sucks, you never have to do it
again. Yeah, I don't
have
to keep going, for sure. And they could also tell me, no, you're not good enough. That's fine.
They wouldn't say that.
I know, and that's the problem. It's like, then I would just be like there awkwardly, like, eh, I'm doing great. He didn't send me away yet, so.
Well, you could tell them, like, I'm not that, like,
I'm not practiced.
I just do this for fun. Yeah.
But it could, I'm rusty. And it's true. I mean, it would come back. Like, I was never that, I'm not bad. I'm definitely a better producer than I am a player. So that's where I feel like I'm.
Yeah.
And he has heard my, you know, he's heard the Get Better remix and liked it. And so it's like, well, yeah, but I spent months on it. that isn't me jamming. That is me.
I just think what you should ask yourself is like, do I want to jam?
Yeah.
That's your answer. Doesn't matter anything else. If you really do, okay, great.
I do.
Because if you didn't really, and all of these were like reasons not to, that would be like, okay, don't. But
yeah, no.
Sorry, Mark, what were
I think gonna jamming. Say? Jamming is such an interesting thing because so much of it is listening. Mm-hmm. So much of it is what's the bass player doing? Where are the chords changing? What's the drummer now doing? Where's the beat going? All that kind of stuff. You know, it's not just bah, 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 you know, the same four chords or whatever. Like it's listening and adapting and changing. And that's a really interesting dynamic, I think. And probably something good for a nine.
Yeah.
No words because
it's so,
feels so true. Yeah. I've only ever had one jam session. Yeah. Maybe like just a handful of jam sessions with a couple different groups, and they were all like very brief, like one-off things. I had a band for a while, but it didn't feel like we were trying to put something together. It wasn't a jam session. It was like, let's create these songs.
Yes.
So yeah, I guess I'm a bit nervous because it's a new world. You know, it's an unknown thing, and then, you know, obviously it's very known, but it's like unpracticed for me.
Yeah.
But
I don't really understand jamming because I sort of jam with a friend who plays viola and I play violin, but we always use sheet music because we both read music. Like we're basically reading like Irish fiddle tunes together, and that's really fun. And then we'll memorize them, but that's not jamming in the sense of what you're talking about.
Yeah, we're just improvising and making something up that's never been made before.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Or maybe, you know, we'll try to actually play along with, like, do covers or whatever. I don't know. We haven't really decided yet. But I just got to get there. I gotta find a spot in my weekly calendar.
You got to commit to a time on your calendar. Yeah.
The commitment thing. I mean, again, like, bringing it back to C90, but, like, that's something that I don't take lightly. It's like, after a while, it didn't become something that I'm... Like, to a degree, it's like something that I'm grateful that people turn up to. But after a while, it becomes, this is what we do on a Friday. And it's not just me. You know, it's like, no, this is the shape of a Friday. Yeah.
Love it.
And yeah, it's, you know, it becomes a commitment in a really positive sense, not something that you feel dragged to.
Yeah, you're not but something obligated. That's just like,
yeah, this is part of the routine. This is what we do. And you know, for a Friday night, that's.
Yeah, that's great. I've been feeling like this year I want to just invite people over for dinner more and like cook for them and just have people come over to our house. Yeah. Like, it's so easy to fall into like, oh, our house doesn't look good enough or it's not clean enough or like, oh, there's no time or like the blah blah blah. Yeah, but it's like I just want to get in that habit because I feel like that's kind of a lost art of like hospitality sometimes. I mean, some people are so good at it, but I didn't grow up with that being a thing. We never had people over. So, I mean, if we did, it was like, oh my gosh, a big production. Everyone, like, it was nerves or whatever. So I just want to be like, this is the shape of our week is like, usually we have people over for dinner on this
Love
night.
It. I'm all here for that.
We'll yeah, we'll get there. You're like, you're getting ready to say yes to the jam. I'm getting ready to say yes to that. Like committing.
What are you, Mark, what are you getting ready to say
Combine
yes to?
Combine the two. Ooh.
I mean, C90 was so huge. I feel like you're still riding that yes. But if you have anything more, that's great too.
Yeah, that's a big one. What am I saying yes to in 2026? More of the same.
Love it.
And to fully embracing without fear the potential of what a Mark Steadman can do. Especially if I get to a point where I am unfettered or relatively unfettered by the brain getting in the way in unhealthy ways.
Yeah.
I would like to say yes to positivity, yes to good decisions. Oh, God, this sounds awful. I'm going to say yes to yes.
I like it.
And as always, better today, better tomorrow. And correct me if I'm wrong.
Go Hawks. We need a sign-off from you, Margaret.
I need a sign-off.
Yeah.
Say yes to yes.
Perfect.
Perfect.
Nailed it.
Say yes to yes.
Say yes to yes.